The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Hello and welcome to Cyber Chat. Today we're speaking with Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships at the Center for Devices and Radiological Health, and Mr. Chris Butera, Deputy Director, Cyber Threat Detection and Analysis at the National Cyber and Communication Integration Center. I saw your article, Dr. Schwartz, that about the new partnership between FDA and DHS, and I got all excited. As you know, this is a topic that totally interests me. My background is in healthcare, and I see all these medical devices throughout facilities all the time and always wonder how we're going to do it. Before we go there, Chris, on November 16th, President Trump signed into law the formation of the new Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA.
Sure, yeah. We're really excited to have an agency name that the public can really understand and look to as kind of the central place in terms of coordination for all cyber issues, as well as a lead in emergency communications and infrastructure security. And we're really looking for the public to view us as kind of the one-stop shop to be the national risk manager for the nation.
Does it really change anything for the public, or is it just more of the consolidation of resources so they're all focused?
There will be a slight reorganization and a bigger focus on cybersecurity as part of this. And so I don't think it necessarily changes anything the way we work with the public. We've been working with the public for many years, specifically with critical infrastructure, with the medical community, and it doesn't really change the way that we work with industry, but it really kind of provides that bigger focus area on cybersecurity.
Okay. Oh, no, I appreciate that. So back to the topic that we came here to talk about, which is medical device security. What does the medical device ecosystem look like, Dr. Schwartz?
In a word, I would say it's evolving.
Okay.
We've been working very aggressively with the industry for the past several years and with stakeholders to further advance the state of security of medical devices. And we've seen a great amount of progress and maturation. But this is an area that will continue to evolve and continue to mature with time.
And Chris, DHS, when we think of DHS, I know they have a medical component to them, but we don't think about that. How will the intersect with the FDA happen?
Yeah, so DHS is responsible for securing all 16 critical infrastructure sectors, of which health and public health and healthcare is one of those sectors. And that's really the uniqueness that DHS brings, is we're able to work across all 16 critical infrastructure sectors and look at the threats that really aren't usually defined for one specific sector. And we do that in numerous ways. And one of the ways we do that and we're successful in doing that is we rely on the sector-specific agencies that have that really institutional knowledge. And so that is HHS and FDA specifically with medical devices that we rely on to help us in terms of trying to understand what these vulnerabilities are and what the impacts to patient safety are.
And so, Dr. Schwartz, we talked about this last year on the show, but on average, some will be longer, some will be shorter. What is the life of a medical device in the ecosystem?
The life of a medical device from the time that it goes on the market,
yes,
and its use can be up to even 20 years or longer. You know, the equipment that we often see in hospitals, such as MRIs and CT scans, these are huge capital investments that hospitals make. The intent is for those devices to stay in place as long as they're functioning effectively and safely for that duration of time.
So, Chris, that poses a problem, right? 20 years ago, the threat vectors that we have today or then are much different than we have today. So there's a security component or a security ecosystem must be put around the other ecosystem, the medical device ecosystem. How do you see this partnership going forward?
Yeah, so for us, we treat medical devices much as the way that we treat industrial control systems. They have similar problems in terms of trying to get them patched, trying to keep them current with the latest software. Sometimes patching cycles are once a year, you know, very irregular patching cycles. And sometimes it's the owners of these systems don't even have ability to patch them themselves. And so we really make sure that we focus on medical devices as, you know, the safety of actual patients and United States citizens, much like we do with industrial control systems, where we believe that if there's a specific impact to a control system, it could have an effect on the life or safety of United States citizens. So we really put a lot of focus on specifically around medical device vulnerabilities as well as industrial control systems vulnerabilities.
So one of the issues that I've seen as a medical CIO is it's a medical system, and the CIO is almost rendered powerless to touch them because they'll impact patient care. And not trying to be the alarmist, but in the cybersecurity realm, that's concerning for us, because a lot of times this thing can't be secured, it won't be secured until a capital investment can be made to replace it. Do we see a point later in life, or later as this matures, the DHS will say, this device needs to come off the network? Is that even remotely possible at this point in the day?
So we really strive to work with the vendors to be able to actually update those devices. That would be one of our worst case scenarios in order to say something like that. We hope not to have to do that. And we work very closely with FDA to work with these vendors to make sure that they're able to patch these systems. But the other thing I want to mention is we really try to preach in terms of a defense in depth scenario.
Agreed.
where we have good segmentation between medical devices and IT devices. Usually the ways that some of these medical devices are exploited is they're not usually connected directly to the internet. They're usually connected to an enterprise IT environment, and the infection or compromise would come from that IT environment. So putting proper segmentation, intrusion detection, other controls in place between the IT network and the medical device segments is really one of the important things that we try to get owners and operators to do.
And I'll ask Dr. Swartz about the approval process in a second, because I know we covered that. Are we seeing that the medical device companies are receptive? I mean, their business is to sell new stuff, right? And so if we're trying to prolong, or a hospital is trying to prolong life, are they still receptive to this? Is cybersecurity, or are they can only do so much?
So I think it's a balanced picture.
Okay.
In that, first of all, FDA has released policy around what our expectations are with regard to maintenance of devices through its life cycle, including the management of cybersecurity through the life cycle of that device, recognizing the economics and the hardships that healthcare organizations will have in terms of this is not a laptop computer that or a phone that one just trades in every few years and replaces, but that this is a device for which there has been a significant investment. And the device is functioning in a manner that is providing the kind of care intervention that's necessary for the hospital. So it is important to balance that concept of maintaining and servicing and continuously managing vulnerabilities of those devices and the cybersecurity of those devices through the device lifecycle. At the same time, we have to be also fostering the development of new devices that are going to have greater security built into them, so that the legacy issue which we face today is one that will eventually, you know, go away.
My guests today are Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships at the Center for Devices and Radiological Health, Mr. Christopher Butera, Deputy Director, Cyber Threat Detection and Analysis at the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center. Dr. Swartz, we were going to talk about the FDA approval process for a medical device.
Yes.
What does that look like?
Yes. So when a manufacturer is prepared to bring forward a new device that's going to go on the market for review, then the manufacturer is responsible for submitting to the agency, to FDA, a package that is essentially documents that speaks to the development and design of that device from a standpoint of safety and effectiveness and the appropriate kind of performance testing that is necessary in order for FDA to review that device, again, for its safety and effectiveness. There are, depending upon what kind of risk classification the device has been assigned to, the type of submission will differ. But regardless, a device is not allowed to go on the market and therefore to be commercialized or to be distributed until it has gone through this procedure at FDA, where it's either considered to be cleared as a medical device, which are often class 2 medical devices, or approved, which are class 3, a higher risk level devices. What I want to note here, which is particularly important for our discussion, is that cybersecurity is a critical component of that pre-market review process. We issued back in 2014 what our guidance is of cybersecurity for medical devices so that manufacturers know what we expect for them to include within their pre-market submissions. But because, again, this is such an evolving area and the new threats that continue to emerge have been ones that we are paying very close attention to, and we've learned a lot also over the past few years, we have just recently released an updated pre-market guidance that continues to raise the bar with respect to the expectations that we have of medical device manufacturers to bake in, to really build in security into those devices before they would be allowed to go onto the market.
And is 2014 when the medical device manufacturers first started seeing strong guidance for cybersecurity, or was it even earlier?
So 2014 was the first guidance that we released with respect to what the content of pre-market submissions should look like with respect to medical device cybersecurity. The agency has released other guidances in the past around software, particularly off-the-shelf software, but really specific or really focused on cybersecurity, 2014 was the initial pre-market guidance and its final.
And one last question, the approval process, and I promise I have some questions for you, is we mentioned that on average, 20 years, a device can be in existence in a hospital, in function. How long can the approval process take from design? So once a design is done and they start to submit, how long can that take?
So a clearance or approval process can vary in time, and we've been working very diligently at FDA in terms of also trying to compress or streamline that time frame so that devices that the public needs can get onto the market in a more facilitated, in a more expedited type of a manner. But from the time that a submission comes in, it could be anywhere from several months to, at times, it could be several years.
Gotcha.
It really depends also on the type of data that the manufacturer needs to produce as part of the evidence generation.
Yeah, and the only reason I ask is because I want everybody to understand how difficult a problem that you're trying to tackle together, these two agencies, is that we have this legacy stuff out there that was designed long before. I mean, some of them weren't even designed probably what originally connected, being connected, and now
right.
They are. And mm-hmm. and so it is a huge problem that you're tackling, and I think this is great. So we have this memorandum of agreement between FDA and DHS. Chris, can you tell us about it?
Sure. So the memorandum is really just formalizing the working relationship that we've had for a number of years around specifically around vulnerability coordination with medical device vendors, and then also with the research community.
Now, FDA has a great cyber program. I've spoken with the CISO, and it's one of the strongest programs in the sector. Will DHS be helping with any future guidance that's put out about medical device security?
So we coordinate specifically on a lot of general kind of cybersecurity advice. And when we have kind of the need for specific things, for example, the impact to patient safety, things along those lines. Those are really kind of the times where we really coordinate with FDA and the actual subject matter experts, because us at DHS, most of us aren't medical professionals. Uh-huh. We are cybersecurity professionals and have a lot of knowledge and technical expertise. But when we try to think about, hey, what would this specific cyber vulnerability present? What kind of impact would that have to patient safety? That is when we really work with FDA and try to get them to answer that question and work together to disseminate that information to the general public.
No, and I'm glad you made that point. I think a lot of people think cybersecurity. And medical, though we all think we're special, it really is different, and it really is special, you know. So I appreciate that. So it mentions a new framework for enhanced coordination and information sharing about potential and or confirmed medical device security vulnerabilities and threats. How will that work? Will the communications come out from DHS? Will they come out from FDA, or will it be joint?
Yeah, so maybe I should walk a little bit through kind of how we do coordinated vulnerability disclosure.
That'd
at DHS. So at DHS, we do a lot of work in this area. We sponsor the common vulnerabilities and exposures, CVEs number program that's run through MITRE. We also sponsor and run the National Vulnerability Database that's run through NIST. And through both of those programs beforehand, we do a lot of the coordinated vulnerability disclosure for researchers who maybe don't want to work directly with a vendor, or sometimes when a vulnerability spans multiple vendors. So those are kind of the two situations where we try to get involved, as well as specifically in industrial control systems and medical devices. So between all of these programs, DHS has helped with the coordination and publication of over 14,000 vulnerabilities in 2018. 800 of those were in the industrial control system space, along with 37 medical device vulnerabilities that we actually published last year. And that was a record number for us by over 100% from the previous year. So we do a lot of work in this space. And really the way it works is when someone reports a vulnerability to us, sometimes they report it directly to DHS, sometimes they report it to FDA, sometimes they report it to both of us. And like I said, we work through the process. We try to notify the vendor. Usually the vendors are very responsive, but if they aren't responsive, we usually utilize the FDA relationships with those vendors to get them to become a little bit more responsive and to try to help to develop the mitigation actions for the vulnerability.
It sounds like the community as a whole has a lot more support now, especially in this area of cybersecurity.
Yeah, I would say so. And I want to underscore the level of coordination that we've enjoyed over the past few years with DHS in terms of the support that we receive in regard to coordinating around vulnerabilities that are brought to FDA's attention, brought to DHS's attention, and how we work through those together, you know, so that where we're able to really provide value, again, is, as Chris was saying, number one, really bringing the vendor off into the table. And very importantly, in terms of being able to assess the patient impact, the impact to safety, which really takes into account a lot of considerations that are unique, that are different from perhaps other, you know, industrial control systems because of the environment in which these devices are used and because of the high stakes or the consequences if these devices were not available to patients.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. My guests today are Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships at the Center for Devices and Radiological Health, and Mr. Christopher Butera, Deputy Director, Cyber Threat Detection and Analysis at the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Federal News Radio is now Federal News Network. We're the news organization of record for the federal community. Our mission is helping you meet your mission. Federal News Network.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. My guests today are Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships at the Center for Devices and Radiological Health, and Mr. Christopher Butera, Deputy Director, Cyber Threat Detection and Analysis at the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center. I will say, you both have very great titles, and if it was a chance for me to make a mistake, you definitely gave me ample opportunity. So, Dr. Schwartz, We didn't talk. Well, first thing before we start, I think a point in the last segment was made that I want to make sure we caught, which is this relationship isn't new. It's just been formalized through this memorandum, mm-hmm. which is a great thing. And I think it's good for people to know that this partnership exists because it's very important medical device and DHS has a very important mission as for cybersecurity. So I applaud both organizations for bringing it together. But what is the new guidance that was just released for pre-market submissions, Dr. Schwartz?
Yes. You know, we talked about the fact that this is an entire field that has continued to mature, and what might have been adequate to state back in 2014 by way of policy and guidance and expectations for manufacturers is no longer sufficient as we continue to see an evolving threat landscape and as we learn more. And the idea behind the new pre-market guidance draft is really to continue to advance the state of security, to do that by driving the area of new device design and development so that there is less and less of the challenges, the great challenges that we've seen with the legacy-related devices. And so we highlighted specific themes within this new pre-market guidance. And if I had to identify the three major themes, it's trustworthiness of these devices, it's transparency around the devices and communication of the component parts in those devices, and it's resilience. So those are almost like the three cornerstones upon which we build and that we emphasize. So it also enables manufacturers to really think about the environment and to undertake a shift in culture with respect to cybersecurity from a standpoint of the adversary. We want to see more threat modeling going into the submissions of these new devices, and not just pure threat modeling of the device, but thinking about it on a systems level, because these devices present as exposures and areas that could be vulnerable to different types of attacks or intrusions. So thinking about all of this a priority as part of the design and development of new devices definitely puts these devices in a more rigorous or more robust stance as they will go onto the market.
You know, one of the things that I struggled with when I was in an environment was that a lot of modern medical devices are depending upon modern or regular computer operating systems. So they're updated. You know, when we went away from Windows 98, that was hell on medical devices. It really was. Are we also pulling in the Microsofts and the Linux companies to help with this problem? Or at least conversations with them.
Yeah, no, this is, as you say, Sean, this is a really a whole of community issue as I talk about it. You know, we really have to bring in all the stakeholders and all of the parties that can contribute to problem solving here. So yes, discussions with the Microsofts and Linux and others are very much a part of the grander conversations that we're having, because we're not going to be able to solve this alone. Agreed. Within government, and the medical device industry is not going to solve this on their own either. It is really representative of the entire supply chain. Agreed. If you think about it, and the entire ecosystem.
Agreed. So Chris, as a non-medical guy, you've now walked into something, right? I mean, so what are the complexities that you have in this medical device IoT? You know, when you bring it down to its most basic element versus the traditional IT environment?
Yeah, so I think the medical devices, while they do rely on a lot of standard operating systems and protocols, they also sometimes have very unique protocols and communication paths that traditional computers might not have. And so what we see when we try to do a coordinated vulnerability disclosure of an IT vulnerability, we really try to target in the 45 to 90 days time period for to develop a patch and get that patch rolled out and then disclose it to the public. When in the industrial control systems world, we see that averaging about 200 days, so it's quite a bit higher. And then in the medical device, it's even higher. It's a little bit short of 1 year. So it takes a lot longer in terms of building in the complexity of trying to patch some of these complex vulnerabilities in these unique systems. And I can also appreciate that the types of vulnerabilities that have been reported to us have gotten quite a bit greater in complexity as well. So when we first started doing a medical device coordinated disclosure back in like 2013, a lot of the vulnerabilities that we were handling were like hard-coded administrative credentials. You know, things that are, you know, basically just used to remotely administer these devices. Agreed. And, you know, once once that credential is leaked, you now have access to all of the devices. But the types of vulnerabilities that have been disclosed to us recently are much greater in complexity, and so we give the vendors quite a bit of additional time to work through the process of actually patching and fixing those vulnerabilities.
You know, hackathons have become very popular, and even DEF CON, as the voting machine companies found out very recently. Is there thoughts of starting to put medical devices through those type of processes to help with identify vulnerabilities before maybe someone bad does?
Yeah, you know, what's very exciting is this past year in August of 2018 at DEF CON in the Biohacking Village, for the first time we had a device hacking lab there that was established with manufacturers who had volunteered by bringing forward their medical devices and enabling the security researchers or hackers to come into the room and to hack away at devices. And this aligns with the encouragement that we've been providing to manufacturers to work together with security researchers, because white hat hackers are, in fact, supporting these efforts by identifying vulnerabilities before they're exploited, before harm occurs, and therefore being able to drive the fixing of those vulnerabilities, which will make those devices more secure and therefore safer for patients as well. We're looking forward to actually expanding the device hacking lab this coming year in 2019. And we hope to be announcing a challenge around that for manufacturers at our upcoming workshop in January of 2019.
Chris, with the final comments, you won't be able to say you're not medical anymore, you know, after working on this program. But anything else, anything about CISA as a new organization?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we're just really excited that that many more researchers are paying attention to medical devices and trying to help us find vulnerabilities in medical devices. And that certainly is what we need. We need the industry, we need private citizens to help us do this research. The government as a whole can't achieve this mission without help from industry and researchers. And so, you know, as part of this new cyber and infrastructure security agency, we really just are looking for more coordination from the general public, from industry, and for people to really follow the coordinated vulnerability disclosure practice and not to release medical device vulnerabilities to the public without going through coordinated vulnerability disclosure with the vendors or any other type of vulnerability, because that really could have some significant harm to the impact of patient safety or to other critical infrastructure sectors as well.
My guests today have been Dr. Suzanne Schwartz, Associate Director for Science and Strategic Partnerships at the Center for Devices and Radiological Health, and Mr. Christopher Brutera, Deputy Director, Cyber Threat Detection Analysis at the National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center. I am Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. Keep up with the latest cybersecurity news at cyberchatnews.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly. We'll see you next month.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.